Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
A trail of abuse at the FBI, but no evidence of political bias. That's the factual finding of Justice Department Inspector General Michael Horowitz in his long-awaited report on the FBI's investigation into the Trump presidential campaign and the Federal Intelligence Surveillance Court. Plus, Democrats decide on two articles of impeachment against Donald Trump. Welcome. I'm Paul Gigot with the Wall Street Journal, here with my esteemed colleagues, Kim Strassel. Hello, Kim.
Hello, Paul.
And Bill McGurn. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Paul.
So let's the Horowitz report, which we have long been waiting on, finally comes out. And it is almost 500 pages, so we are just getting our arms around it, but have had a chance to dig into substantial chunks of it in some detail. And I have to say, Kim, I have looked at a lot of inspector general reports in my time, and I never expected to see one that would lay out so many details about abuse of power and abuse of process and deceit and deception at an agency like the FBI. Now, I guess that might have been naive. We all remember J. Edgar Hoover, but this was supposed to be the new FBI where none of that happened. And ignore the top line for a second about political bias. The inspector general said he found no documentary or specific evidence about bias. But the process mistakes and the violations of, I think, good order and integrity at the FBI and the secret process of getting a warrant on a member of the presidential campaign is shocking to me. And maybe, I don't know, am I wrong?
No, it is shocking. And I prefer the word violations to process fouls, because process fouls make it sound as though everyone was simply sloppy.
Right.
When you look at the pattern of what the inspector general laid out here, and again, this report, yes, written very much as an IG report, which means it's in fairly anodyne, bland language, but every line in that report has meaning. And what it shows is this pattern of FBI agents and senior leadership again and again providing information to the FISA court that was wrong, that was overstated, that was incorrect, that excluding exculpatory evidence.
Right.
And this is like a huge no-no, because remember, the FISA court deals with the FBI in an ex parte fashion, meaning the FBI is the only person that goes in front of the court. There's no competing pleader. And so the FBI, the FISA court relies on the FBI to be scrupulously accurate in what it presents in deciding whether or not the court is going to issue a warrant to do one of the more severe things in this country, which is to surveil an American citizen. And in this case, the FBI again and again deceived the court. And there needs to be consequences for that.
No fewer than 7 errors and omissions found in the original FISA application to surveil Carter Page in 2016. And in the 3 successive ones, Bill, 10 more. 10
right.
more. And these aren't minor errors
right.
and omissions.
Right.
These are fundamental to the credibility of the Steele dossier, which formed the basis for the FISA warrant.
Right. Each one of these things is kind of its own story. I mean, just the two that struck me is that, you know, there was that footnote saying that the Steele dossier was funded by it was very vague.
Had some political partisan
background,
right?
It was very vague, but that only was in there because of the objections from a Justice Department official,
Evan Stewart,
who thought that they were in real trouble using this this partisan information. So it's one little footnote, which itself was misleading, didn't tell you the whole story.
And just to buttress your point, Bill, the only reason it was in there was this fellow's insistence.
Right. It was not in there because of the FBI. And then The other thing that really struck me is the one where the FBI lawyer falsified an email. He went to the CIA and basically asked for confirmation. Was Carter, had Carter Page work for you? And he got back an email saying he was a source. And this guy forwarded it to his supervisor at the FBI, and he altered the email to say Carter Page was not a source. The reason that's important is because if Carter Page had worked for the CIA in a good capacity and they were happy with him, as the CIA reported, that would count in his favor. So this guy falsified a thing to help get a signature. I think I was on the third renewal of the FISA. So there are all these really, really iffy things. And again, the... you know, we have our issues with the FISA courts in general, but a judge, in addition to there being no counter case being made, the judge is totally reliant on this. And Director Comey seemed to take the position that you didn't have to verify every fact in there. You could just say, "Wow, Chris Steele's a good guy, and we've used him before, so we're confident in this." Which, of course, turned out to be misplaced.
Just to elaborate on the Carter Page's association with the CIA, Horowitz doesn't confirm that it's a CIA, but Page right. said it was. And from 2008 to 2013, Carter Page, with his various Russian contacts, was reporting on those Russian contacts to America's intelligence service, the CIA, in good order. He was an operational contact, right. as Horowitz refers to him. And they were happy with his product. Okay, so think about this. So Carter Page is working for...
Serving his country.
Serving for providing good information about his contacts with Russia. Then the FBI in 2016 says, wait a minute, you have these Russian contacts, and we are going to use those Russian contacts as evidence to have a warrant...
To present you as a foreign agent.
As a foreign agent, probable cause that you are a foreign agent working for the Russian government. Well, wait a minute. Just a bit ago, he was working for the U.S. government. So, and then for the FBI not to take, to basically say, we're not even going to tell the FISA court
right.
when we're making our case for probable cause that he is an agent, that he used to work for the United, for the right. CIA. That's... What an omission.
And I just say Carter Page is sort of interesting. Just this guy was watched and listened to for almost a year, all sorts of different interactions with the FBI, and he was never charged. He's one of the few people to emerge from this never charged with anything.
Well, he was kind of he was a low-level right. Advisor, Kim, and a kind of a hapless soul. He's not a this is not James Bond. And to portray him in this fashion strikes me as just another example in which the FBI to demonstrate the degree to which the FBI was really hell-bent on getting this warrant on him and investigating the Trump campaign.
Yeah, and watch this space, because I am convinced that as we get further information about this, and in particular when we get the report from Attorney John Durham, that we're going to find out that Page was really central to the FBI's whole beginning interest in the Trump campaign. You know, one of the things that comes out in this report didn't get much attention yesterday is Loretta Lynch confirmed to the IG that, you know, Comey, of all people, pulled her aside all the way back in the spring of 2016 and said, yeah, you know, we've got eyes on Carter Page. And Page had just been announced as a member of the Trump campaign, and he'd been on the FBI's radar screen in the past. But as we just explained, he'd also been in good standing with another agency. What was the FBI doing focusing on him that early and everything? I think there's still a lot more to come on this story.
All right. We're talking about the Michael Horowitz report, the Inspector General report, and you're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
From the opinion pages of The Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Bill McGurn and Kim Strauss. We're talking about the Michael Horowitz Inspector General report on the FBI and the Trump campaign in 2016. And let's focus on the judgment of the Inspector General that there was a justified level of predication, as he called it, Kim, for the FBI to start that investigation in July 2016 against the Trump campaign. But he also said there was a low threshold that the FBI had to cross in order to start such a thing. And then we have both William Barr, the attorney general, and John Durham, his appointee, the U.S. attorney, who is also investigating these matters from a criminal point of view, disagreeing publicly with the Horowitz conclusion about whether the predication was justified or not. Does this what do you make of the Durham and Barr interventions?
Well, look, I think, again, this gets into how to read an IG report. And what's really important is, at the very beginning of this report, Horowitz goes out of his way to say, look, here's one of the things we didn't do in this report, which is that we didn't second guess people's discretionary judgments in the course of an investigation. And that goes to this question of this threshold in which he said, look, there's a really, really low threshold for starting an investigation into anything. Basically, the FBI has a lot of power, to kind of malign an old statement. You know, the FBI can investigate the making of a ham sandwich if it wants to. And in that regard, on the basis of this low threshold, they had the right to start this investigation. They had adequate predicate. Now, I think what Durham's statement and Barr's statement was is just because you have the power to do something doesn't mean that it was appropriate to do so. And I think that that's what we're going to get from Durham is more information that's going to inform people's judgment about whether or not there really was an honest to goodness good reason for going forward with such an enormous and instantly high level investigation.
A hint from Durham in particular that he has been talking to sources both in the U.S. and abroad, and he has led him to conclude that to disagree with Horowitz on some fundamental matters, which suggests, Bill, that this story is not over. And we may end up finding more about the origin story here than Mr. Horowitz, in good faith, was able to turn up.
Yeah, I think that's important, too. Kim mentioned in the beginning, you know, kind of the disclaimers. One of the disclaimers that should be on it is by necessity an incomplete investigation. For two reasons. One, his scope is only the Justice Department, right? So he can't deal with the CIA or other things. He's an inspector general for the Justice Department. And second, even within that scope, if you had left the Justice Department, you didn't have to cooperate. There are a lot of people that didn't talk and so forth. So it was very limited, whereas Mr. Durham has grand juries and subpoenas, and he can do all sorts of things, and his writ runs much larger. So I think that this is by no means over. There's a lot of questions. Look, the way I sum it up is I think Steele played the FBI with his dossier, you know, that they used. And we now know they really used it. It wasn't just a little minor thing. It was a big part of the FISA.
Central and essential were the words that Horowitz used.
So he played the FBI by getting that in there through various means. And then the FBI played the FISA courts by taking the selective parts it wanted and omitting exculpatory information or other information. And this is kind of how an abuse snowballs.
Let's talk about that in a little bit more detail, Kim, because it relates to the point that the inspector general made that he found no evidence of political bias motivating the FBI actors in this case. He says that they acted on what they thought were matters of principle and government policy. But of course, just because you didn't find the Let's Get Trump memo, doesn't mean that there weren't partisan, there wasn't a certain partisanship that flowed through this process. And here's why I say that. because we know from the report that the Steele dossier was central to the triggering of the FISA court warrants. That Steele dossier started with financing by the Clinton campaign of an opposition research firm, Fusion GPS, which then hired Christopher Steele to get this information, most of it we now know false. And then that was channeled by Bruce Orr, of the, a relatively senior member of the Justice Department, whose wife worked for Fusion GPS, into the FBI, and then through the FBI to the FISA court. So you can make of what you will about the partisan trajectory of that, but it does suggest that somebody, we know that Steele and Fusion GPS and the Clinton campaign very much wanted Donald Trump defeated.
Absolutely. I mean, and in that regard, the origins of this investigation are supremely, supremely partisan, or at least the origins of these FISA warrants. And let's be clear, Mr. Horowitz, in his report, he says, indeed, he did not find any documentary evidence. But he does not shy away. He's got a whole section in his report pointing out that there was certainly demonstrations of bias in a private capacity by FBI actors, and he lists with some great length some of the emails that went back and forth between FBI agent Peter Strzok and FBI lawyer Lisa Page immediately after the opening of the FBI investigation into Trump. And it certainly doesn't look as though those two people were operating without some sort of bias. But I think the more important thing, again, this is an IG report, given that he did not find documentary evidence of bias, he can hardly just guess at the motivations of FBI employees. So what he instead does is just lay out these facts. And when you see so many of these facts again and again and again, and they all go the same direction, they all go in the direction of the FBI abusing its powers in order to go after the Trump campaign, that creates a pattern that I think is very difficult for Americans to close an eye to and suggest that there wasn't some sort of bias or at least institutional disdain for Donald Trump that drove this.
Bill, the other issue that this triggers for me, it concerns the entire FISA process, which was established in the 1970s. Ironically enough, in the wake of the previous FBI abuses, the idea was create an institution, the FISA court, composed of Article III judges, not of the executive branch, who would give their say-so when the executive branch wanted to get warrants for intelligence purposes on American citizens. Sounds like, well, it's just like a normal court order. But of course, the problem is that these are all secret, and these are Article III judges who really don't have a lot of expertise on foreign policy or on intelligence. And the objection that we raised at the time was that far from ensuring accountability, it would in fact undermine accountability, because the executive branch and the FBI going to seek a warrant would say, if they had abuse that authority, hey, the court approved it. And here you have a case where they deceived the court and they got approval, and then they used the court's approval to say, hey, nothing wrong. And that's exactly what James Comey now is saying, nothing wrong.
Right. Absolutely right, Paul. Just one last thing on the bias. Kim's right. What he said was actually fairly narrow. I didn't find evidence that a discretionary choice was. But, you know, some of the evidence for that is how different investigations were treated. Could you look at the Hillary Clinton investigation, all these immunity deals, and say that Hillary Clinton's people were really treated the same way Donald Trump's people were treated? And then I would go into the investigation into Dianne Feinstein, I believe, who had a Chinese spy on her staff, and they told her to do it. And that was not a – so there are other measures, I think. The jury's still out on that one. It's hard to believe it had no – you can say there was a legitimate reason for everything they did, but it kind of beggars belief.
You think they should have told Donald Trump?
Yes. I think that would be – I think that's actually the standard procedure is my guess to try to get them.
Kim?
But on the – go ahead, Kim.
Well, Yeah, so there's a section on this in the report, and basically, and it's very unpersuasive. Now, the IG finds that no policy was violated because there is not, in fact, an official FBI policy about defensive briefings. But he did ask senior leadership there, and the answer he got back was, well, because we didn't know who on the Trump campaign might be colluding with the Russians, we were worried that if we alerted anybody, that it would cause that person to switch up their tactics and cover up what they did. Now, okay, I understand the point about the vagueness of the allegation, but seriously, you're saying that you couldn't go to former U.S. Attorney Chris Christie, who was an advisor to the campaign, or Jeff Sessions, who was a sitting U.S. senator? You were worried that even they were colluding with Russia? It sort of beggars belief.
Well, but how about going to the candidate himself, unless right. you thought that he was a Manchurian candidate, an employee of Vladimir Putin in some way? Wouldn't you want to tell him, hey, you know, you might have somebody here who's
And also, it contradicts their other statements, because at the same time, they were presenting to a court that Carter Page is probably a Russian agent. And they were thinking about other FISA warrants that would have to maintain the same charge against other people, like Paul Manafort and so forth. On the court itself, the Journal, as you know, opposed this gloriously, in my view, in 79 when it came, making exactly the points you make. And if these cases go to court, that the FBI agents that gave this information, if it goes to court, they're going to say a judge signed it. We gave them what they needed to know. And the judge makes that. If the judge needed more information, she should have asked us or he should have asked us. I think there were four different judges for the Carter Page warrant. So it dilutes the responsibility. I mean, by contrast, J. Edgar Hoover sought permission to wiretap Martin Luther King, and it came from Bobby Kennedy. We know— Then Attorney General. We know where the buck stops on those, on that question. In this, it's going to be all fuzzy. Actually, until now, that's been the defense. Oh, a court looked at this. A court has to look at it. And the point is, the judges don't have any. There's two points. Judges don't have any particular expertise on this issue to sort through these things, and the judge is not part of the executive branch. So again, it just dilutes the authority. Now, I would go further.
It dilutes accountability under the separation of powers.
Right, and under the separation of powers, I would go further than you, Paul. I'm against FISA courts. I'm against independent counsels, and I'm against inspectors general for the same reasons. So
am I.
My world's a little simpler.
No, I'm against it too. But they exist.
We have to live with them.
We have to live with them. All right. So, just briefly before we go, let's talk about the fact that the House Democrats have now said publicly they're going to introduce two articles of impeachment, one on abuse of power, as they describe it, related to the president's behavior towards the Ukrainian president and the phone call and elsewhere, and then obstruction of Congress for opposing their subpoenas and resisting and blocking the testimony of key advisors and document production. Both of those are going to be voted on at the Judiciary Committee as early as this week, with a vote on the House floor next week. Kim, briefly, it looks to me like they really decided to make a slimmed-down impeachment, and they want to get this over with as quickly as possible.
Yeah, they're doing this on behalf of their more moderate members who were pushing back against the idea of a vast array of articles of impeachment, some that might even stretch back to the Mueller report. Those moderates wanted narrow grounds and then vaguely worded. So obstruction, which, by the way, this is odd. Congresses and White Houses have fights all the time over documents and witness production. These are normally settled by courts. This would be the first time that we're turning such thing into an impeachable offense. And then rather anything specific like bribery or extortion or quid pro quo or any of the legal terms that we have heard over the last few months, this vague abuse of power charge, which is nothing defined in a statute, and very much in the eye of a beholder.
We will elaborate on this tomorrow when we finally do see the exact text of the impeachment articles. But thank you, Kim. Thank you, Bill. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Potomac Watch.
This episode is brought to you by Vanta. Vanta's trust management platform helps you quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for SOC 2, ISO 27001, and more. Learn how by watching Vanta's on-demand demo at vanta.com/WSJ.